Thank you all for joining us on the Kansas Canopy podcast. This is season 4, episode 4. My name is Ariel Whiteley-Knoll. I'm the communications coordinator for the Kansas Forest Service. Today, I am really excited to have a landowner highlight. We're going to be talking to Tim Lyons, who manages woodlands here in Kansas and can talk to us all about the ups and downs, trials and tribulations of what it's like to be a woodland owner in Kansas. Tim, thank you so much for being on with me today.
You're welcome. This is fun. I'm looking forward to it.
So excited to have you. So to start, let's talk a little bit about your property. Can you just walk us through what are your woodlands like? What's your property like here in Kansas?
Sure. I own 40 acres of old growth timber and an additional 20 acres of native prairie grass in southwest Douglas County in the beautiful 8 Mile Creek Valley. This is an old growth forest that has been around since before the settlement days and was mapped by the Kansas Natural Heritage and Inventory for the Kansas Biologic Survey recently that showed an overlay of the woodlands that existed in Douglas County back before 1856. And that's how old these woodlands are. It's a contiguous forested ecosystem that contains probably about 40 landowners and extends through Douglas County into Franklin County and eventually flows into the Meritazine watershed. And it's characterized by old growth timber, some magnificent trees, primarily oak and hickory. And it's home to all sorts of diverse wildlife that's very unique to a large forest ecosystem. So that's the wonderful place that I live in.
That is so cool. And I just think that, you know, we don't have enough recognition. Obviously, we're a prairie state, and the prairie is a really critical endangered ecosystem in our state. But we're also a forest state. You know, we have those areas of old growth forests. So how lucky are you?
I can't tell you how lucky I am. I'm thankful every day for the place I live in. And it just, it never ceases to amaze me how beautiful this place is every day. And I've been there, you know, I bought the place back in the early 90s. And, you know, I don't want to over-romanticize it. It has ticks and copperheads and every thorn you can possibly think of. But it's just, it's magnificent. I'm very lucky and blessed to live a life like this, in the middle of the woods like this.
That's fantastic. So I'm glad you mentioned when you purchased the property. What did the property look like when you first came to be its steward?
Well, it was wild and unmaintained. There was not even a good road that led to the property. It was a dirt farm track. There was no utilities, no electricity. There was an old trail that went diagonally through the North 40, which is all my timber, and that's about the only access there was. It was rough and rugged, and it needed a lot of silviculture application and forest stand improvement, definitely.
I can only imagine, you know, buying a piece of property like that, that it would be really overwhelming knowing where to start when you're looking at managing even your different types of ecosystems. So what were some of those first steps, or what would you recommend to somebody who first wants to just get to know, what in the world do you do with these woodlands, with this prairie?
Right. That's a good question. It depends on the landowner and what your personal goals are. And it's important, I think, to really define what those goals are and also be flexible enough to understand that as you get older, your goals are going to change with the more that you learn. And that's it. That's the key, is learning, because it is overwhelming. But if you have good goals set, you can approach it like anything else and, you know, break it down into components and go from there. But I definitely would also recommend getting help. And we're blessed in the state of Kansas that we have so many avenues for a landowner, a forest landowner, to get help, and so many different resources. I was very lucky. The previous landowner, with the documents that he left for me, gave me a very old Kansas Forest Service stewardship plan. And I thought, what the heck is this? And I looked it over, and there was an inventory of the trees. There was talk about the plant life, the history of the place, and recommendations. And that's how I first discovered that there were services that could help a landowner like me or anyone.
So it's funny that you say that, because you've probably worked with at least three of our rural foresters. Four. So EJ, Ryan Rastock, Dave Bruton, and I'm assuming one more.
Yes. And forgive me, that was so many years ago now.
It would have been many years ago.
Yes. And he was a fine gentleman. I can't remember his name, but he retired shortly after he redid my stewardship plan. And then, of course, I was with Dave Bruton for, at least a dozen years. And Dave was wonderful. He's so helpful, just as all the Kansas Forestry staff have been. And the services that they provide, their ideas and their experience. Dave eventually got me to get involved in forest stand improvement and actually shared his ideas about the different programs that were available, including cost share programs, the EQIP program, which I've utilized for decades.
Yeah, so that's a great segue into what are some of the resources or the programs that you have used that you feel like more people should be aware of or should be taking advantage of?
Well, that's a good question. The key word there is aware. I was lucky because the previous landowner had a stewardship plan. I think a lot of landowners are just not aware that we have a Kansas Forest Service and a Kansas Forestry Association of landowners. And that's the first step. The specific programs that have benefited me the most on my land have been just the advice I get from people like Dave and Katie and now EJ. They're so knowledgeable, and they're actually, of course, trained and educated foresters, whereas, you know, I was kind of a self-learned forester. But one of the best programs, I think, was the cost share EQIP programs, where we took a section of 10 to 15 acres each year and decided what we wanted to remove and then replace, and then, of course, planting 15 to 20 bare root seedlings every year. That was a great program.
Yeah, so on that note, what would you say were some of the biggest challenges that you took when you started managing your woodlands and navigating these programs and trying to figure out your priorities?
Well, you know, that's a good question, navigating the programs. Well, I had good foresters, and I also worked with the NRCS as well, too. They have a lot of good programs as well, too. But I had people like Dave that helped me navigate it. So the navigating of these programs wasn't the difficulty. It was the implementing of the programs. And I would caution any landowner, especially a younger landowner, to, you know, don't bite off more than you can chew, because it is overwhelming, and you want to do a lot to improve your forests, but there is just only so much time. I would say pick your priorities, and that's why setting goals in advance is so very important. And kind of stick with those for a while. Don't try to do too much. That was the real issue, I think, early on, is that, you know, I wanted to do too much. And then along the way, you have issues that you don't think are going to come up. Like one example was, is I had been planting over several years in different EQIP programs, bare root seedlings using, you know, the 4-foot tree shelters. And I was having them destroyed constantly. And I couldn't figure out, we couldn't figure out what the heck was doing it. And, you know, it looked like first that the deer were crushing them, banging into them. It looked like rats or raccoons. We couldn't tell. So finally, we set up game cameras. And lo and behold, it was the raccoons.
Oh, my gosh.
And I have some great game cam pictures that actually published a few years ago. And I don't know what it is about tree shelters, but they just want to destroy them. It's something to do with their little black bandit masks, I think. I have pictures of them standing up, chewing them, tearing them apart, climbing on them. So, I mean, that's just one of the little setbacks, you know, that you get.
I never would have thought raccoons would be that devious, but they're smart.
They are.
So along those lines, is there a project or a goal that you're particularly proud of over the years that you worked really hard on and felt like, you know, maybe accomplished is too strong of a word because it's always ongoing, but that you made good progress on?
That's right. It is always ongoing. And then something comes about, say you get an invasive species, or 11 years ago now, we had a tornado come through. Oh, and it destroyed probably 150 of some of my best trees. And so having a long-term goal and actually accomplishing it, you know, I'm not sure I ever have actually accomplished a goal like that. I mean, we finished 5 EQIP programs, and you can see the results. In a lot of forest area that we had, a lot of like red elm and individual single cedars here and there, and witch trees, especially like giant elderly old hedge trees. You know, we eliminated most of those, turned them into firewood and used them. But then, you know, we planted a lot of beautiful red oak and bur oak, and you know, now almost 30 years later, those trees are substantial. So it's fun to look at those and know that we've improved this forest, you know, for a future generation.
Absolutely. So you had mentioned the Kansas Forestry Association earlier, and I know that you are a member of that. Could you tell everybody a little bit about that group and how it's benefit you to be part of it?
The KFA differs from the Kansas Forestry Service in that we're essentially the users of the services that Kansas Forestry Service provides. We're the landowners. And you don't have to be a landowner to be a member of this group. You can just be an interested party. If you just like learning about forests and woodlands and everything that entails, you know, join Kansas Forestry. We're primarily a group of landowners. There's loggers. There's industry representatives. We get together quarterly, have our meetings, and I think our greatest accomplishment annually is working with the Kansas Forestry Service to help develop our annual field day, which is an opportunity for all of us as landowners and as providers to get together in one place and have an open discussion about the things that are of most concern to us as landowners. And it's a great educational opportunity, too. So I would encourage everybody to join Kansas Forestry Association. If nothing else, I think one of the best benefits is just to get on the phone and talk to another landowner who's been doing this for a long time. The best advice I've gotten over the years, I think, has been from other landowners. Their wealth of knowledge and their trial and error experience in the woodlands is priceless. So that's the benefit, I think, best benefit of Kansas Forestry Association.
I wholeheartedly agree, and I'll make sure to link the KFA website in our show notes. But, you know, that's what we're all trying to give you today is just a little taste of, you know, your experience as a landowner and try to tell people, you know, hopefully people can learn from you a little bit. But that is KFA, the networking, the sharing, the I tried this and it failed miserably, but this is what I learned from it. So I think that that kind of networking is really, really critical when you're taking on something as challenging as managing woodlands. So
absolutely.
Appreciate you sharing that. What other resources, you know, you've mentioned agencies like Kansas Forest Service and NRCS, organizations like KFA, were there conferences you had attended, books you've read, were there any other resources that you really turned to or still turn to learn more about managing woodlands?
Well, yes, there's a publication that I get weekly, and it's from the National Woodland Owners Association. It's called the Weekly Woodland Word. I look at it every single week. It's kind of a meta review of all the science and forestry publications for that week, and it just casts a wide net and pulls in all sorts of really interesting articles from how to manage and navigate through carbon credits to tree pruning. And last week there was a great article on 9 things you should not do with your chainsaw. So it covers a lot of ground, and it's just really fun. That's one that I would strongly recommend to everybody. And then there's been a number of books that I use and go to all the time. One of the best ones was called Managing Your Woods, A Landowner's Guide, and it was by Larkin, Severson, and Waterman, and it was the 2011 Book of the Year for the National Woodland Owners Association. I use that as a reference consistently. And then there's been a number of other books too. Plus, I would also encourage people to go to the Kansas Forestry Service website, because there are so many pamphlets and very user-friendly brochures on how to, well, from every aspect of silviculture. I mean, there are recommendations and information available to the landowner.
Yeah, and I will make sure to link all of those, but I appreciate you, you know, mentioning our website and our publications. We're in the process of updating a lot of those. But I think that that's so important that you've offered such a variety of resources, because it's really not a one-stop shop. You really can't just go one direction. It's such a comprehensive topic. And I personally really appreciate you sharing the National Woodlands Owner newsletter with me. It's a fun newsletter, but it's got really quality information too.
It does. It is a lot of fun. Yeah.
I'll make sure to link that as well. So going back to your property, what does the future look like for your property? Do you have goals you're still working towards or things you would still like to see accomplished?
Oh, absolutely. One of the things that is a concern is landowners like myself and many of my neighbors in the 8 Mile Creek Valley is, you know, we're getting older. And most of us have children, and some of our kids are interested in, you know, following through and maintaining these lands and coming down and living down here too. Some of my neighbors don't have kids. Some of my neighbors are, you know, seventh, eighth generation landowners. I'm the first generation landowner. So one of our great concerns is maintaining these as woodlands. So we're very, very interested in legacy programs, and we're doing a lot of research. There are a lot of different avenues to go. So that's one of our goals, is to ensure that this pristine, beautiful forest ecosystem, together with my neighbors, who have a lot of the same goals, is protected.
I think that's a huge mission for anybody who owns land right now. You know, what is the future of that? So that's a lofty goal. I hope you all can accomplish it.
We've got a lot of different plans, and I'm getting a lot of help from Kansas Forest Service in regards to setting this up. Right now we're working on a program we're going to design a stewardship program, not for just one landowner, but for an entire forest, which contains 40 or 50 landowners. So I'm not sure this has ever been done in Kansas, but it's a very interesting project going forward.
That's fantastic. Along those lines, what would you identify as the greatest concern for Kansas forest owners today?
That is a very relevant question today, because as you move farther east in the state, these counties like Douglas County, Johnson County, Miami County, Franklin, Osage, they're becoming more and more populated, more densely populated. And there's a lot of pressure for development. And right now, because there's a lot of federal dollars incentivizing industrial scale wind and solar, there's a lot of emphasis on that. And we're very much concerned that what we're going to see is our forests, especially like the 8 Mile Creek Valley, fragmented or wiped out completely by these large-scale projects. I've had industry representatives come down, and very nice people, and showing me maps of what their projects are going to look like, or they want them to look like in the future. And they have envisioned pretty much fragmenting the entire 8 Mile Creek Valley, which would mean that it would no longer be a contiguous forest ecosystem. And as you know, forests act very differently than fragmented woods. And you know, we see this strange inconsistency in that we're talking about cutting down forests for green energy. It's like, you know, we're cutting off our left foot to save our right foot. And I think we need to recognize that we already have a wonderful carbon infrastructure that already exists in our forests. And desiccating them, dividing them, fragmenting them, I mean, you know, that's not productive. We already have this infrastructure that already works in our battle with carbon. Let's preserve it. That's what we're very concerned about. And it's not just this kind of development. It's urban development as well, too. The city of Lawrence, which, you know, I live about 22, 23 miles from the city of Lawrence, but, you know, they have their new 2040 plan, and my goodness, their boundaries of the city limits are expanding like crazy, and a lot of people want to live just outside the city limits, so you have these, I call them urban forests, where the landowners, you know, they have small plots of 5, 10, 15 acres, and pretty much they look like subdivisions, and it's moving our way. Yeah, and then you have highway development and the intermodal system, which is developed over in the Edgerton area. And, you know, it's pushing development even to remote areas. So that's a great fear for us. So that's why we're interested in legacy programs to help protect this.
I think that's very important work. It's, you know, it's interesting that you mentioned that right before I came here to record this morning. I saw on Twitter in Johnson County, there's a park that they're considering turning into a business center, and it has 100-year-old oaks. And, you know, the community is really rallying support, but unfortunately, there's not a lot of protections for our trees and for our woodlands. So I'm so appreciative of the work that you all are doing to try to protect your forest, because it's a very important ecosystem.
Well, thank you. Yeah, we're trying to do some unique things. I've done a lot of reading where other forest owners as a community have done things to kind of protect themselves. Even as far, there was a group in Oregon I read that actually is developing a homeowners association on their mountain, and they're all forest landowners, right? Well, one really positive thing about this is that although I've known my neighbors in the 8 Mile Creek Valley for many, many, many years, I've gotten to know them so much better because we're all into this together. Most of us, 9 out of 10 of us, are all interested in preserving these woodlands. And we've come together as a forest neighborhood. It's a fascinating process. It's been wonderful.
That's excellent. Well, I look forward to having you on another episode in the coming years so you can tell us how successful you all have been in that.
I'd be glad to do that.
Looking forward to that. Well, as we conclude today, one thing I like to ask some of our guests is about a favorite tree, and it can be a species or if you have an individual tree you really love. But do you have a favorite tree?
Well, yeah, I really love pears and eastern red cedars. Now, that's funny because I can just hear every forester in the state of Kansas gritting their teeth right now.
You're going to get our show canceled.
No, I'm just kidding. Northern red oaks are my very favorite. They're such an elegant, stately tree. The bark is just so beautiful. They grow to great proportions, especially down in the Creek Valley. There are some monster oaks down there, and they're beautiful in the fall. And eventually, you know, when they pass or when you want to harvest them, the wood is just so beautiful. I've tried my best to protect them over the years because beaver really love that cambium layer, you know, and so I've had to fight beaver to protect them. But no, that's my favorite tree.
That's fantastic. You really weren't kidding about the wildlife on your property. If you have beaver and deer and raccoons, you've got the whole gamut.
Yeah, you want to borrow some?
Absolutely.
I'd be happy to send you some.
That's wonderful. Well, thank you, Tim, for being on with me today. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
No. Well, yes. Actually, just one thing. Again, I'd like to encourage people to use these resources. Kansas Forestry Association, please join. And also the Kansas Forest Service. I want to remind people that all these great services that they provide are for free. There's no obligation. Doesn't cost a penny. This is a great and wonderful service that the state of Kansas provides for us. So I encourage people to utilize that. And good luck in your forests.
That's excellent. Well, thank you so much, Tim, for being on with me today. Thank you all for listening. This has been Season 4, Episode 4 of the Kansas Canopy Podcast.